Yes Music Podcast, episode 150, The YMP Wayback Machine.
Hi, this is Jeff Dales, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 150 of the Yes Music Podcast, on fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine. Please remember how you can get involved with the podcast yourself, as usual via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. Well, we've done it. With your support, we've made it to episode 150 of the Yes Music Podcast. Those who are rather eagle-eyed may have already worked out that in fact the total number of episodes released is closer to 162-ish. But this is the official episode 150, where I'm going to take a quick look back through the episodes I've released since 2011. And here's how it all began.
Welcome to the introductory episode, episode 0 of the Yes Music Podcast. My name is Kevin Mulrine, and I'm your host for this exploration of the greatest progressive rock band in the world. First of all, some disclaimers. I'm going to tell you what this podcast isn't going to be about. I don't class myself as a Yes historian. I don't know every detail of the band over the years. I'm not a Yes trivia expert. I wouldn't win any fan trivia competitions. I've only been to 5 Yes concerts. However, what this podcast is going to be about is an exploration of the music of the greatest progressive rock band in the world. It's going to be my thoughts rather than a regurgitation of books I've read or interviews I've seen or listened to. It's about me listening to Yes music almost every day of my life for over 25 years.
Hi, this is Conan Robison from Spanish Fork, Utah, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
So what do you think? Did I manage to keep to those original objectives for the podcast? First of all, of course, I went through every studio album that existed at the time in order. Here's part of what I said about Fragile.
Overall, it's a track of great complexity, but built on some simple riff elements. There's so much to notice in its almost 9 minutes that you need to listen repeatedly, and this is true of the whole album, which stands as a towering achievement of progressive rock mastery and encapsulates everything that the classic Yes stood for. I think it's much more consistent and self-contained than Fragile. It hangs together better, and once again I find myself breathless after listening to the invention, the contrasts, the musicianship, the virtuosity, and the tight integration of musical ideas and performance. How could the band top this? Could the band top this? We will see in the coming weeks if they manage to.
This is David Pannell from Australia, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
It wasn't long before I started doing interviews for the podcast with listeners, with those connected with the band, and with other prog rock artists. Here's the first of those interviews, which was with Mike Murphy.
His classical influence is obvious on the solo piece Mood for a Day. And another one of my favorites is on the Tales of Topographic Oceans in the Ancient Giants Under the Sun. Near the end, he goes off into a classical bit with John Anderson's singing over it. And I think that adds so much to what Yes was doing in those days. As a matter of fact, that's his Mood for a Day. It was inspired me to pick up classical guitar and study it seriously for a long time. But yeah, he can play jazz. He'll bust out into a Chuck Berry lick from time to time. Yeah, and then he'll be doing the classical stuff. And the Chet Atkins style, like on the clap and other places, they're peppered throughout the songs. I couldn't even come up with a specific song in it if I I could if I needed to, but it's everywhere. And he works those things in so smoothly from one style to the next within the same song that it's remarkable. He is a true talent.
Hello, this is Gary from the Gold Coast, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
Here's Martin Jones on his concert experience of June 2011.
Yeah, really good. I mean, as I say, when 2 years ago I went to see him, of course it was the first time that Benoit David had played with Yes, and he's always difficult to replace John Anderson. I mean, John, as far as I'm concerned, he's irreplaceable, but this time around I felt he was a lot stronger, and got a few notes wrong, but don't we all? And I think that, you know, he was a lot better this time round than he was 2 years ago. So, you know, John Hansen is missed as far as I'm concerned. Jeff Downs on keyboards was, as far as I'm concerned, a lot better than Oliver Wakeman was 2 years ago.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, I think Rick Wakeman is difficult to replace. I've seen Wakeman play a couple of times with the S, and, you know, he's in a different class to everybody else. But I think Jeff Downs, to be fair, has got a lot more experience. That came across, you know, playing with the band as well. So, but Chris Squire is Chris Squire, and he was outstanding. The bass sounded better than I've probably have ever heard him play it before, and the other two were brilliant. I mean, Alan White, apparently, people were saying Alan White looked tired at the beginning of the tour, but when I saw him, I can't honestly say that. I thought he was outstanding.
This is Jeremy North from Cheltenham, England, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
The first time I asked for some specific contributions to the podcast was the Champagne Moments episode. And here's what Joost Maglev sent in.
Hi, this is Joost Maglev. I'm a musician from the Netherlands. My Yes Champagne Moments include the beautiful instrumental piece In the Middle of And You and I, where Steve Howe's steel guitar interacts with Rick Wakeman's keyboards. Since 1991, Yes, I've been playing this part really slow, and that sounds awesome to me. Also, the beautiful finale to Awaken, where it's all organs and choir galore, is one of my favourite moments.
This is John Sims from Sheffield, England, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
One of the episodes I especially enjoyed was when I got together some listeners for a round table event, and I really must do more of these events, because hearing other fans' opinions is always worthwhile. Joost Maglev was also on this roundtable, but here's Andy Pashley and Paul Wilson.
So, Andy, there's no room for the new John, then?
Well, I don't agree with the fellas, really. I've always thought that John Anderson's singing is absolutely wonderful, but I don't agree with a lot of the comments we've heard over the last few years saying Anderson is Yes, because that just seems to me to be a kind of errant nonsense, really downplaying the contribution that the rest of the band have brought to the writing and the arrangement of the pieces. If that were the case, then John Anderson's solo work would be of a similar level to the band's work, and which is not the case. I mean, there's probably two maybe of his albums, you know, Elias and maybe, I don't know, Animation or something, that are strong albums all around. A lot of his solo stuff I think is pretty weak, and certainly over the last 15 years, I think really the only thing that I would think would be a major contribution he's made would be the work of Magnification, which I think has got some great stuff on it. I've heard most of the stuff over the last 15 years, and I find it sort of cliched in the way his lyric writing has turned down. He follows the same themes, and I think it's, you know, a bit hackneyed, and I can understand why the band, in the direction they're going, which is perhaps a more straightforward, I suppose, rock approach in Fly From Here, has moved away from the kind of music that he wants to create. You know, he talks a lot about trying to integrate music from, I know he talked about the Ethiopia a lot, I don't know if it was ever actually recorded anything in that vein, or world music or whatever, and that's not the way the band wants to go.
No.
And I think that the amount of animosity that's been flying around the last couple of years between the various members in the band now and him has created, would only create a return to the disharmony that was quite apparent in the latter stages of the last tour they had together in 2004. So I'm quite open-minded about the new singer and new music being created, and seeing how they perform that. I mean, I love Anderson's voice. I think he's a marvelous singer. I think he's a wonderful live singer. I've never really heard him hit a poor note or an off note, as opposed to Benoit. Obviously, he had his downs and ups. But I don't think it's necessarily the thing to do.
I know Paul wants to come in again and say something about that. Paul?
Yeah, it's just that I do believe that Yes is still a great band, with or without John. without John as well. But Yes is more than a sum of its own parts. Look what happens when John leaves the band, which he has done a couple of times. They look to other people to provide some of that songwriting spirit. They've been to Trevor Horn and Jeff Downes for drama, and then to Trevor Rabin. And if you compare 90124, Trevor Rabin's demo album, to 90125, you can see, you know, that really, even though they are fantastic musicians and great arrangers, they need something else as well to sort of drive them on. Even more recently, they've had other people, haven't they? Billy Sherwood and a whole number of people whose names escape me, but Kevin really doesn't like them when he does the episodes, you know. Extra cast of songwriters involved.
Soc Josep Xavier Delmas des de Barcelona i esteu escoltant el Yes Music Podcast.
You may remember we had a quiz on the podcast, and here's how I announced the winner of that. So it's time we talked about the results of the quiz. Honourable mentions need to go to Paul Tormey and Ken Fuller, who got very, very close, but just out in the lead in the end was our friend Joost Maglev. So well done indeed, Joost. You will be receiving the very small prize, as I keep referring to it, through the post, and you'll need to let me have a postal address for you. So there we are, the results of the first ever Yes Music Podcast quiz. I enjoyed it a lot, and I hope you did too. One day, perhaps later this year, we'll have another quiz, perhaps in a different format.
This is Ken Fuller in Pennsylvania, USA, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
I started doing an irregular series on the Yes alphabet, and here's me talking about Jeff Downes in the Yes alphabet for D. Another D in Yes personnel is, of course, current keyboard player Jeff Downes. As I mentioned in the Yes Alphabet episode for B, without Downes I really don't think we would have a viable touring recording Yes to talk about today. This is because of his involvement with the D album, Drama, as well as his current role. With Trevor Horn, Downes managed to kickstart the Yes of the 80s, even if only for a short time. The music on Drama and the music on Fly From Here, which has its roots in the drama-era writing of Downes, and the others, is some of my favourite in the whole Yes catalogue. Downes was instrumental in helping to fuse the 70s Yes aesthetic with a new soundscape, which managed to preserve the character of the band, but also push it in a fresh direction. This is testament to his musicianship and creativity. He's very much his own person. He plays the Wakeman keyboard parts his own way, and I don't see that ever changing. It's never going to please all Yes fans, but I'll reserve my judgment on Downes' live performances until I get to see the band live. Hopefully very soon.
Hi, this is Melinda from the Silver City, Toledo, Ohio, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
This is my exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band, of course, but that means that I've also considered some of the bands which went into producing Yes in the first place. Here's a little bit about Mabel Greer's Toy Shop, and particularly the proto-Yes track, Beyond and Before. The introduction is very similar to the Yes recording, except that quite a few of the production touches are missing, like the Yes choir interjections and a few guitar licks. Squire and Banks are definitely playing the same parts, however, and when the vocals come in, it's the right tune with the right harmony. I assume that's Squire on backing vocals, just like in the Yes version. The vocal line is slightly different in places, and interestingly it moves down in pitch at the end of some phrases, which tends to give the song more of a melancholy feel than Anderson's rendition. As I've mentioned before, the shape of the vocal line in the song can directly affect the feel. Lines which stay static or even move upwards can bring a more positive atmosphere to a song. This is a technique used many times by Yes over the years, and points back to settings of sacred texts over the centuries, what became known as word painting. Individual phrases of the vocal line here are similarly restricted in range to the previous tracks, but the song takes on new life in the Reaching the Snow section. The whole feel of the track perks up just as the pitch rises. Peter Banks' counter-melodic work above the chorus is the same as the later version, and works really well. I can see why it was retained. This seems like a much more mature piece of composition than the other tracks, and I don't think that's just because I know it so well. Squire is given free rein to add high melodic fills between lines, and I love to hear this earliest example of the technique. Banks adds a final heroic solo which includes the main theme of the song, and then it fades away. I'm so pleased this track and the others have been preserved, even if it is in this scratchy, muffled manner. It's fabulous to be able to reach back to the pre-Yes years and catch a glimpse of the origins of the sound of the band. Hearing these archive recordings has inspired me to try and get hold of a copy of the Peter Banks collection, as well as a dustbin full of rubbish. If you have either of these records, do let us know what you think of them.
Hi, I'm Michiru Kuruma from Hyogo, Japan. You're listening to the Yes Music Podcast, celebration to 150 episode. Wow!
It was great to talk to Miguel Falcao all about his Yes bass covers, and here he is on Chris Squire.
Yes, it was very prominent. It was very loud in the mix. It was a very active, distinctive. Everyone says distinctive, but it was the tone, you know, the tone of the bass was very, very, I enjoyed very, very much the kind of brightness that he used. Of course, now we all know it's the roto sound strings and all the technical aspects of it, but the tone that I immediately thought it was something very, very, you know, very beautiful to my ears. Then it was not just a matter of tone, of course, it was the way he played, as you said earlier. He uses a lot of, going on very different places of the scale, not just sticking to the usual positions, but going to higher frequencies to the high notes, but without losing the bass character of it. I also like the fact that he used effects in a very, very smart way. And of course, the bass pedals and to be able to do backing vocals and do those, nice vocal harmonies, which is not necessarily related to the bass playing, but it adds, a new dimension to the role of the bass player. If you go and listen to bass playing on the 70s, you will find that, there are many, many good bass players, but their sounds usually sounds a bit old when compared to the sound that Chris Squire had in the same year. So it was really the combination of tone and the roles that he played as a bass player, also adding the bass pedals, the effects, and the backing vocals. That to me was very, it was a model. If I went to a stage when I was, 18 or something, I would want to make the same things, to have the bass pedals, the effects, to make the backing vocals, to be very, very active, a bass player in a very active role and not just the standard role.
Olá, sou o Miguel Falcão, de Coimbra, Portugal. Estão a ouvir o Yes Music Podcast.
Another series I started to produce was Yes Tracks Through Time, where I considered an original Yes track and then different live versions through the years. Here's a little bit about Time and a Word. If you compare the first and the last recording I've featured here, the differences are obvious, but what's also clear is that each set of musicians have made this song their own, while preserving the melody and beauty of the music. Once again I'm finding myself wondering what the current lineup would do with Time and a Word. It would be great to hear a restored version, a little closer to the 1971 original. I love the piano treatments from Wakeman and Khoroshev, and the very typical Howe elaborations to the original parts, but a bit of Downes Hammond might be rewarding, and I'm sure Davison would add his own stamp to the vocal line. What's certainly not in doubt is that Time and a Word is a song which still has the power to affect deeply the emotions of audiences. Its positive message and gently nurturing spirit survive. After listening, I really do believe that the time is now, and the word is love.
This is Paul Tomei from the great state of Michigan, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
One longtime friend of the podcast has been Ben Craven, who's a prog artist in his own right, of course. And it was an amazing achievement to be able to connect with him from the UK to Australia with his band The Section for some fantastic live music. Here's a little bit of it.
Thank you.
This is Paul Wilson from North London, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
I managed to speak to Sid Smith, who did the Stephen Wilson Close to the Edge remix liner notes. It was a pleasure to talk to Sid.
But ultimately, my involvement comes in gathering together, if you like, the story of the making of the album. I think that's generally what you're trying to tell. You're trying to kind of put the album into some kind of context within the band's internal story. And then really what you want is, or what I want as a fan, is I want to hear what John Anderson has to say about, you know, the writing of Close to the Edge, or you know, where the inspiration for the words to Heart of the Sunrise came from, or whatever it is, you know. And you want to try and give each member of the band a voice, and to make sure their contribution comes forward in the notes. The downside to that is, you know, you're always cramped for space because you've got a set amount of pages in a booklet, and inevitably, you know, for example, for this, you know, I had a 2-hour conversation with Roger Dean,
right?
And for the liner notes, I think it, you know, I mean, I think I had to boil that down to 50 words, you know. So that's one of the problems with this thing. Steve Howe, for example, was exceptionally generous with his time. Incredibly detailed in terms of what he went into, but inevitably, you know, because of space considerations, all of that material you just can't fit it all in. So you have to make judgments.
This is Tim Stannard from Surrey in the UK, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
Earlier this year in May, I got to see Yes again for the first time live in several years. It was a wonderful experience. Here are a couple of clips from what I recorded at the venue.
So we've arrived at Symphony Hall in Birmingham, and my son William is here. Say hello, William.
Hello, William.
How did I guess I was going to say that? Okay. Yes, it was very predictable. Well done. So we're here in Symphony Hall, and sitting just outside the box office where we thought we had to go and pick up our VIP package from, and of course, it wasn't there at all. Okay, that was Alan White just coming out of the Hyatt. Just managed to say hello to him, and he's going across the across the road there. It's it's getting quite surreal now. Off into the Hyatt. That was Alan White of Yes. Okay. We found Andy.
Ah, good evening, Kevin. How are you?
Not too bad. I understand you've been here for some time.
Oh, we've been here hours soaking up the pub atmosphere. So.
Excellent, in the middle of Birmingham. It's absolutely fantastic. Now, what are you looking forward to tonight?
Well, just pretty much everything in general. I mean, I'm really looking forward to Close to the Edge, the whole album, and the track, and You and I in particular. So, but everything really, it should be a really good night.
So I hope you've enjoyed hearing a little bit about my concert experience. And I hope you do get a chance to see Yes before long yourselves, because it's definitely, definitely worthwhile. Everyone I've spoken to has said how much they think that the band is enjoying a renaissance, and it was absolutely stunning tonight.
This is Jamie McQuinn in Dayton, Ohio, and you are listening to Yes Music Podcast.
And finally, for this way back episode of the podcast, here's me talking to Jeff Downes. What an amazing experience to be able to talk to a present member of the band. And it all came about because of your support on the Yes Music Podcast.
You know, any album you do, you come away from, you don't really know what to make of it. And certainly, you know, this one was no exception, really. But I think it's an interesting album in respect of the fact that, you know, it's obviously the first one that John Davison's done. And I think in many ways we kind of let him run with the ball on it, and we all collaborated with him separately, and then we just started to put it all together. So it's an interesting process, certainly. Mm-hmm. I think Subway Wars does encapsulate two sides, you know, the John's side of his chorus writing and my instrumentation. I think that those two things come together pretty well in the song, and I think that I think we're conscious that, you know, Yes is not just about straightforward songs, and so I think we wanted to mix it up a bit on that one, and you know, and throw a few weird time signatures in there, and you know, make it a bit more interesting. But certainly from my standpoint, you know, the two pieces that we worked on were both big progressive rock pieces, and that was the only one that we did, which hopefully we'll be able to put the other one on, you know, when we get when we do another album. But it's still there, and it's a very interesting piece nonetheless.
So that's about all the time I've got this week to look back across those 150 official episodes of the podcast. All that's left for me to do is to say thank you, thank you, thank you, and thank you once again for listening, for contributing, for making comments, for sending in the audio clips for today, and for all the other episodes that you've done that. And please keep listening. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.